On this episode, I interview Rini Sugianto. Rini is a senior animator and photographer who is originally from Indonesia and currently lives in Orange County, California. She is an endurance athlete who enjoys climbing and running on the mountains around the world. Her first ultra was 7 years ago. Since then, she has ran races such as UTMB, UTMB CCC, Castle Peak 100K, the Canyons 100K, Mountain Lakes 100, and many more races. In this episode, we talk about her trail running journey, UTMB, stepping outside her comfort zone, courage to try new things, and what is currently helping her get through her ACL surgery recovery. Welcome to the She Runs Trails podcast. I am your host, Elements of Daisy. I am an ultra runner and endurance mindset coach. If you're new here, hello there. In this podcast, I interview other female trail runners in hopes to educate, empower, and inspire more women to run on the trails. If you're a returning listener and have been enjoying the podcast, it would really mean a lot to me if you can rate and leave a review in whichever platform you're listening to this episode. If you would like to support the podcast and help it keep it ad-free, please consider donating as low as a dollar to the podcast. You can donate through the Anchor account. The link is in the show notes. This will really help me. Thank you so much for your support. Let's get into the show. Thank you so much for joining me today, Rini.
No, thank you for inviting me.
I'm so excited to talk about to you because you've done a lot. You've done a lot and you ran a lot of different places. You ran here in the U.S., you ran outside of the U.S., you travel a lot, you do a lot of things outside from just trail running, such as climbing, rock climbing, and a lot of snow activities, sports. But tell us a little bit about yourself. How did you get into ultra running?
I started with, hiking. And then I made all the usual mistakes when you first started hiking and all that stuff. But yeah, so instead of just hiking, because I just like being outside and stuff. And then, and I hated running. As I think a lot of runners also feel that way. Like when they first started, I just did not like running at all. So I hated running. Because in my head, you're just running on the road, right? And then I got into mountaineering first. So it kind of a way around. So I started running just to actually to train for all of the mountains adventures that I'm doing, because I felt like I need the endurance. So I started running, and then actually it was for my first trip to Kilimanjaro, and I'm like, okay, I need to run. I need to train for this. So I started running just 30 minutes, and that's all I could do. Every day, just 30 minutes on the treadmills. And because I live in LA at that time, and I still didn't like it until I actually start running on the trail. And I was like, wait a second, we can do this on the trail? This sounds like a light bulb. And oh, this is way more fun. So that's how I got hooked into it. And then, of course, a friend of mine was like, let's do a marathon. And I jump into it. And then the same friends was like, let's do a 50 miler. I'm like, okay. I think within the span of a year, I jumped from a marathon to an ultra, and then got hooked from there.
And your first ultra was a 50 miler. How did that feel jumping from a marathon to a 50 miler? Even a lot of people get intimidated just jumping to the 50K, but what inspired you to go for that 50 miler?
Honestly, the first thing is just because, it's the friends, right? So I live in Marin at that time, and there's a huge community there. The San Francisco Running Company, and I live in Marin, so it's right there. So the first one I did is actually AR50, which is not that far. It's I think it's in Sacramento. And my friend convinced, this is the easiest ultra. This is the beginner ultra that you can do. And he did all the research. I just completely trusted her. I was like, sure. And then he found a training plan. And then both of us were doing the training plan. And it's way more fun when you have someone that doing the same exact thing. So both of us we have someone to talk to. like all the little things like during the trainings. And I think we did that for like 8 months. Like we trained together for 8 months and to do that race. And there's something nice for the first ultra race because you just had no idea what you're getting into. And I kind of like miss that feeling a little bit right now after done multiple ultras. Like I miss that like obliviousness, like, you know, when you're like on the start line, I have no idea how this is going to be, like what I need to do. I made all the noob mistakes that you can't think of in the first race and all that kind of stuff. So but it was great. Like, but all I can remember from that race is like, this is not flat. Who said this race is flat? This is not flat. Like, you know, that's all I can think of. Like, I was actually angry. Like, oh, how not flat that race was. But in hindsight, it was actually pretty flat considering it's for 50 milers. It was pretty flat. So, but yeah.
What are some of those mistakes that you made in case someone currently listening to you is training for their first ultra so they learn from your mistakes?
Oh my God, there were so many. One other thing that I remember, I got lost, and I rarely got lost now. Ever since then, I didn't get lost, thank God. But, you know, it's like I had a watch, but I didn't know how to like to put a route on my watch or anything like that. I was following someone in front of me. So that was the first mistake. Don't follow in from people in front of me because they might make a mistake too. So all three of us got off the route for a good like a mile and a half. That was a pretty long like to get lost. And then by the time we realized it, we had no idea where we were. Or like, you know, and I tried to call like my husband and was like, where am I supposed to go? Like, you know, and that's another thing. Like I didn't study the map. I didn't study the route. I just kind of blindly went into it. And we like asked around some people and then we just ended up tracing our route back. By the time we found the intersections, we're all like, how did we miss all these ribbons? There's so many of them and we all missed it. And then the second mistake was like, I was mad. I was mad for myself, right? Because I just lost 3 miles. And of course, I want to make up for all this lost time, or like quote unquote lost time. So I went hard, like I just ran hard, and was just like, you should not do that. Like, you know, just calm down. But like, nope, I was panicking. So I actually like tried, like I ran angry and also just like gotta go fast, you know. And I paid the price, like, you know, obviously, like, you know, by. Like, I can't remember what mileage, but like after a while, and I just like, oh, I'm hurting. It's like everything hurts. Like I shouldn't go that fast. I didn't drink enough because I was so caught up on like this race environment that I just didn't think of eating or drinking. And I remember my husband, every time I got to see him, he was like, your bladder was still full. Like, I was like, I think I was drinking. I was like, nope, this is still full. Like, you know, it's like, but you just get, I wasn't taking care of myself. So on the last 6 miles, I was just suffering. It was just a suffer fest. But, you know, like at the end of the day, like that, you learn from all of that, right? Like, you know, but it, like I said, it's like, it is kind of nice when you just kind of like run it, like, you know, not thinking about it and you just go for it.
It's a blessing in disguise, in a sense, like your first race, like just jump, do it, and you'll learn from that, from the mistakes, and you'll, it's kind of like ignorance is bliss in this case.
Right, yeah.
It's you don't really know what to expect. Yeah.
Like, it's still my fastest 50 milers, because I think because of that.
you're because you rationalize things now more. You understand, like, oh, no, you kind of hold yourself back, and especially, like, with your experience, and be like, no, I'm not going to make those mistakes. But sometimes, you know, it's good to make those mistakes, because that's how we learn.
Yeah.
When after running this 50 miler, were you, like, motivated, like, oh, what next, or what kind of just kept you going? Like, what was that motivator to keep running it, especially since you weren't used to running or you didn't like running?
So I think by that time, because I was running so much during the training, I think, you know, I ended up kind of like liking it, and I could, and But what kind of hooked me in the beginning is like the feeling that I'm actually progressing from something. It's like, it's something new. Like, you know, you're a beginner and then you start noticing, it's like, I'm actually getting faster. I'm getting stronger. So like that feeling, it's kind of like, oh, this is nice. Like, you know, like how far we can take this. And like everyone that's probably done their first ultra, they ended up signing up for their second ultra, like, you know. And then I think my second one was North Face, which is even closer to my house at that time. And that's where I trained anyway. And yeah, like in that, I wanted to do that one just because like I wanted the vert. Like I think coming from hikings and mountain backgrounds, that's kind of what I like. Like I like being in that environment. So I tend to pick like a more mountain race, like, you know, not like a flat race. And then, you know, like after a while, you kind of start really realizing, I started realizing that like, okay, I'm not good on these speed things. Like, you know, I'm not fast, you know, but like I have coming from hiking, I have a pretty good base. I can keep moving for a long period of time. So that's kind of like also perfect for ultra in a way.
Let's talk a little bit about vert, because I feel like a lot of people get intimidated by vert. Like they see a lot, like, oh, that's a lot of vert, I don't want to do it. What would you say are some benefits of going into a race with a lot of vert?
You can hike. You don't have to run. That's great for me. Like I actually like when it's like, oh, sweet. I could actually hike that far. Like, you know, because like marathon, it's painful for me because I felt like I have to run all the time. 50K is the same thing. And a lot of flat race, I ended up like by the end of the race, I'm usually like, I can barely walk right now. Like, you know, everything hurts. But in the mountain race, like after the race, I like, okay, this is fine, actually. Like, you know, my legs are not trashed. But yeah, because I think like because of my background's hiking, that I'm so used to that, and the only flip in my brain is just now I have to, like what you probably heard a lot of times, like hike with a purpose. So now instead of like hiking slowly, I just have to like, okay, I have to go faster and hiking. So that's the only difference. So, you know, like and I kind of already know sort of like the technique where you're using poles and everything, because that's what I used before. So I'm pretty comfortable with that. Yeah.
What has helped you with your training, especially with these big mountain races, going from, yeah, most of it, I noticed that you ran a lot. That's what I was wondering. And I was like, I wonder if she lived up in North Cal, because I noticed a lot of like in the San Francisco area, you did a lot of races there. Yeah. I recognize Mount Tam.
Yeah.
Jesse did the 50K up there, and I saw that you did, you know, North Face and so they're 50 miler. Compared to running, how do you strategize your training plan to help you for these mountain races?
So actually, like during the week, you know, because I work full time, so during the week I don't do a lot of like vert or mountain runs. So my run during the week is pretty flat. It's just like kind of a normal, is like either on the road or like even if I can like get into the trail, a lot of the trail around my place is just pretty flat. Like, you know, it's not a huge hill. But on the weekend, that's when I put all like the mountain run. So, and I think that should be fine. Like, you know, you don't have to run mountains all the time. So one of the things that I learned after doing, I almost say it's like I was doing too many mountain runs in like for the first couple of years, and I lost all the speed that I have, but the very little speed that I have, like I lost it because of like, you know, I was moving so slow a lot of the time, right? So I didn't put a lot of like speed work and everything. So I think actually for training, even for a mountain race, you don't have to run on the mountains every day of the week. Like it's actually a good idea to like run flat, run the speed, or run on the tracks, like, you know, to get that faster turnaround, and then do your more specific terrain like on the weekend or like a specific block before your race. So it doesn't have to be all the same throughout your training.
For the mountain, what made you realize that you were doing too much mountain stuff? Like, what was that realization for you? Where you're like, oh, maybe I'm doing a little too much of mountain that's actually impacting my training instead of benefiting my training.
I just started noticing that, like, one, I start noticing I'm actually getting slower, you know, and even on, like, this the flat train. So, like, you know, and I'm, like I said, like, I'm not fast to start with, but, like, before on the road, for example, I was comfortable doing, like, 9-minute miles. Like, it was pretty, like, a zone two for me. But then, and then I started noticing, I was like, oh, this is actually getting harder. So that's one thing. And then another thing, I getting into this comfortable pace where, you know, in the mountains, you swap between running and hiking. So when it started getting steeper, you just started like hiking. So the constant running, it's a little harder for me, you know, because like, I'm not used to like constant running anymore. So I started like kind of noticing that things and just like, okay, I need to get that part back. And then, you know, because I was just, it's so easy to just settle into the comfortable sort of like things and just like, let's just run easy the whole time, like the whole week. Like, you know, like, I think that's kind of like, it kind of backfired a little bit.
I feel like there's two types of runners. It's the ones that are always running fast and they have a hard time running easy. And then they have the runners who are really comfortable with running comfortable. Yes. And really hard to get them to run faster.
Yeah.
And ideally, you want to be in the middle of the both, right? You want to get a little bit of both where you run fast some days and run easy some days. You can't always run fast or always run in the comfort level.
Yeah.
That's I thought that was funny. I fall in the comfort. I don't like running fast.
Yeah, I know. Like, and it's hard for me to run, like, even forcing myself to do speed work by myself, it's always harder. So I try to like run with someone else that's faster than me. So then I'm forced to run faster. Because if not, like, automatically I'm just like settling to my own pace again. And I'm not pushing as much.
What helps you find the courage to run with people who are faster than you without feeling judgment or feeling like, oh, I don't want to slow them down, or I don't want to run with them because I'm just slow? Like, what gives you the courage to run with faster people?
It's hard to, like, what you're saying is that you always feel that you become a burden. Like, you know, you feel bad when people are, like, waiting for you and all that stuff. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I might have to actually ask my friends how they feel running with me slow, like, you know, like slowing. But I think, like, you know, you just kind of mentions what the intentions from the beginning and, like, you know, or even just like, you know, don't worry about it and I'll just try to follow the pace, for example. And another thing, like, fortunately, I think my friends, they're pretty blunt. You know, like, they're not waiting for me. They just go. So, like, you know, so that's good. Like, in a way, like, we can be sort of, like, honest with each other. And then they know I'm slower. So, yeah, like, it's not that they just, like, feel obligated to slow down. A lot of the time, I'll see them in the beginning. They're just, like, gone. I was like, damn it. Like, I gotta catch up with them. So, yeah.
But that's what pushes you to go faster than what you normally would go alone. Because when you're by yourself, you're like, nah, I'll just take a snack here. I'll take pictures of this view. You're like, I can't take pictures. I gotta keep going.
Yeah. Yeah. And also just like running, sometimes running with like strangers. Like how, as weird as it is, like, you know, or like a different groups, like, you know, that you're not used to. It put you in an uncomfortable position sometimes in terms of like, you know, I don't know the people, right? Like, but in the same time, so you want to kind of keep up and, you know, like, you just kind of push through it.
So. And then you realize how fast you can actually go, your potential. You're like, oh, wow, like, I'm impressed with my performance today.
Yeah.
How do you go about picking your races? I was looking at your ultra sign up and you have a very good diversity. Like, Castle Peak is one of 100Ks that it's on my bucket list. And I saw that you did that. That's freaking awesome. And you have a lot of these mountain races. You did UTMB and CCC. Like, how do you pick your races?
So, Castle Peak is actually my first 100K. So, I think it's also, so the first thing, I'm really bad with heat. So, I tend to pick raised in the colder area, which is why you probably see a lot of my rays that's either in the North Bay or Oregon, just like north of this, not north of here. Or if it's in SoCal, it'll be like February, January kind of thing. That's something that I'm still working on, about like do hot races, because I tend not to do well on those. And then the mountain race is more appealing for me. So anything in the mountains or more in a remote area, that's usually, so locations is important for me. Because when you're doing a big race like that, you want to be motivated. So like, if you don't have that motivation, it's harder to even do the training. Especially like when things get tough on the race, it's harder to like stay in the race if you don't like what you're seeing. So like view, it's kind of important for me. UTMB and CCC, it's a little bit different. So I've been going to Chamonix before I even know about UTMB for climbing. So I went there before to climb, and I had no idea what UTMB was. And I kind of like saw the posters, and so I was like, oh, they might have like some events in here. Like, I'm totally oblivious of how big it was. And then, so when I started running, and then everyone was kind of like, started hearing you like UTMB, UTMB. And I was like, wait a second, this is the place. Like, yeah, I've been going to the same place. Like, you know, I've been going to this area. So that's kind of a no-brainer for me. I was like, oh, sweet. And then, you know, I've been going there almost every year anyway. Then might as well just go there to run and actually experience it in a very different way. And I mean, I'm glad I did it. I love that area. I love the French Alps and running around it. It's like, this is awesome. Yeah. So,
and tell us, for those that do not know, because a lot of, you know, this podcast attracts a lot of new beginner trail runners, just, you know, brief sentence, what UTMB is, and just kind of your perspective. You've been there multiple times, and you ran two of the different races that UTMB hosts. So you want to share a little bit about what UTMB is?
Yeah, so UTMB is actually like a series of races throughout the week that's located in Chamonix, which is in France. And that area, it's border between three countries, so France, Italy, and Switzerland. So it started off, UTMB itself, it's about 107 miles. It's odd number. It's 170 kilometers, but it's 107. So it's not 100 miles. And it actually went around all the three countries. Like, you started in France and Chamonix, and you go to Italy, to Switzerland, and then back to France. And the majority of the trail is actually on the hiking trails called Tour de Mont Blanc, which is just, you just go around the Mont Blanc Massif, which is the mountain range over there. And the CCC is a 100K version of it, which is shorter. It starts in Italy, and then it ends in France. And then there's multiple other races within the week. There's OCC, which is a 50K. And then I think right now there's like an EMC, which is even shorter. Like, I can't remember how many kilometers.
I think it's a marathon.
It's a lot shorter. And then there's an MCC, which is just for a volunteer. And then there's the TDS, which I don't think they're going to have it again next year. But TDS, it's kind of like, it's almost like a stepchild, because it doesn't follow the other race. It doesn't share the same route. It's just completely on its own in Italy's side, more remote. It's so statistic-wise, it's harder than UTMB. So I'm not sure if they are going to have TDS again next year, actually, which I was supposed to run TDS this year or 2020, but like that didn't happen. So I'll be pretty sad if I didn't get to run that one.
I was looking at the stats. I was like, wow, TDS looks harder than, almost yeah, as hard as UTMB, definitely harder than CCC, and it's almost the same distance. I was like, wow, the vert is almost the same as UTMB.
Shorter distance. So.
Yeah. How do you get into these races? So you've done it twice. I know the process kind of changes, but what, based on your experience and what you know, what helps you? If someone's interested in running one of these races, what would you recommend them do and kind of the process behind this?
Yeah, so in the past, there is, that's called like UTMB qualifier. So, and you kind of collect points. So for CCC, I think you need 10 points, and then UTMB, you need 15 points at that time. So, and so you run all these approved races, and if you finish, then you get those points, and then you put your name on the lottery, and you know, that's pretty much it. But the rules change significantly in the last year, so now it's all based on stones. So it's not, so now it's like a UTMB World Series where there is a UTMB races from UTMB, that's the one that they run. You know, I think there's like UTMB Thailand and then Falterans. I think one in China, and then there's like actually all over the world. And then in the US, it's Western States, Canyon. I can't remember. I think Speed Goat. Yeah, I think there's three of them now. And so those are the one that's going to give you stones. And depend on how many stones you have, that's going to decide which lottery that you can enter for UTMB and CCC and OCC. So it's a lengthy,
very competitive.
It's a lengthy process because I think it took me almost like a year and a half to collect those points to got into CCC. And then that's the thing, like once you started getting the point, you kind of want to keep it rolling because it keeps for 2 years, right? So you don't want to lose it. Like you just kind of like keep going, like start collecting the points. But now it's a little bit different with the stone system.
What was a memorable experience when you ran? So you ran CCC first before UTMB. What was like a memorable experience for you?
CCC was awesome race for me. Like compared to between CCC and UTMB experience for me, like CCC is definitely a lot more memorable for me. And you know, because it was my first race there in UTMB, and then just kind of getting to experience the. It's massive. That race is massive. Like it's massive in a lot of ways in terms of like it's a whole week of celebrations. And Europeans treat the race very differently than we are here in the States. Like everyone was out. Like the people that live there, it's not just they don't even involve in the race. They're not part of the race, but they live there, and then they will be out on the trails. And I remember running through the first night and it was up in the middle of nowhere. I didn't even know where it was. And then there were people there, like with a cowbell at night. And it's just like, I was like, where did you come from? Like, you know, I was like, I haven't even seen like houses. So in every aid stations, like people were out there like cheering you and everything. And Chamonix itself, like on that week, it's so easy to get sucked in and just like wasted your legs that whole week just from walking around, meeting, it's like kind of like seeing all the elite runners that you usually see, you know, only in the films or anything like that. So that was really cool. And also the expo is like huge expo. So it's very memorable. But the running itself, like, you know, I was having fun the whole time. Like it was great. You know, I have a friend of mine, like a good friend of mine who actually went there and then like crew me. Like she did miss me, almost missed me on the first aid stations because of the traffic. Because we're trying to, you know, you were trying to figure out how everything works in the foreign countries. Like it can get pretty crazy. But yeah, and then just like my first experience coming into town to the finish tunnel and like how many people in there. So I finish in during the day, which is, that will be my advice for everyone. Try to finish during the day. I mean, I know you probably want to go fast, but finishing during the day on UTMB and experience those just tunnel of people, it's something else. It's just so many people. You don't even know who they are, but they're just like cheering for you. You know, want to high fives and all that stuff. And then, you know, like everyone like bringing their flags, their country flags, and running with their families and everything. So it's awesome feeling to like going into that finish line.
It's kind of like a World Series or like kind of like the Olympics of like ultra running, right? Because you have people from all over the world and really from all pretty much like different. You have really elite runners, and then you have more of a middle pack runners out there too. Like, I think that's really beautiful.
Yeah, and it's awesome. And for me too, like, you know, because I'm Indonesians living in the States, right? And then that was kind of like my first time to meet all the other Indonesian runner that got in. So it's nice. It's nice to be able to actually like meet with everyone, and then we kind of like get together, and we become, you know, like Indonesian team, for example, and just supporting each other. And so for me, it's almost like that's the once a year when I get together with all, like, you know, all the other Indonesian runner.
And how about UTMB? Like, what was a memorable experience for you?
So that is something that I still put like kind of an asterisk in my list, you know, because like I did finish, but I got a stomach bug like the day before the race. So I was throwing up a lot. I was throwing up before the race. I was throwing up during the race and after the race. So it was kind of like a thing that like I felt like I didn't fully race it, because it was more of a survival for me. And then honestly, like the first night. So UTMB started at 6 p.m., which is like a weird thing. That was my first time starting in the afternoon, but I actually kind of like it. And then so throughout that first night until the next day, until I got to Cormier, it was a blur for me. I did not remember a lot of it, because I started throwing up probably like the first 2 hours. And like from 2 hours on, like I just started throwing up. So that was the period of time where I was just like trying to survive, trying to turn it around, and like trying to decide, like, you know, what to do. You know, like, am I gonna survive another night when I couldn't even eat anything? So like from Cormier on, like I think it was long enough time that I slightly eating a little bit, and then I kind of figure out what work and what, like, you know, what the little thing that I could kind of digest. And then I, like, you know, when I got to Cormier, I was like, okay, I'm not stopping. Like, I'm already halfway. Might as well just keep going. I have the time, you know. And but I was racing hot off the whole time. So I think that's one of the races that I would love to like come back and actually race it healthy.
What helps you push through those uncomfortable kind of moments on a race, especially like this? Your UTMB, you starting off already in a discomfort position pretty much, because you're having stomach issues. You're like, wow, mile three and I'm already puking on the side of the trail. How do you get yourself to push through those moments when you're really struggling and you know you have such a long way ahead, like 107 miles? You know, that's a lot of miles. Like, what helps you push out of, like, essentially the pain cave?
Yeah, I think one thing that my friends also said, like, you know, I actually never thought of DNF. I never thought of, like, stopping. So for me, like, I will stop if I didn't meet the cutoff. Like, if I was actually, like, you mean the sweeper got to me and then, like, I couldn't move anymore, then, like, okay. Then, you know, like, I have no choice. But I was still walking. Like, you know, I was still walking fairly fast, especially on the uphill. And then that's kind of, like, encouraging a little bit when I was able to, like, kind of pass people. And, you know, and it's just very uncomfortable. But I think, I don't know, like, I didn't want to, one of them, like, I didn't want to regret it. That's one thing, too. Like, I didn't want to quit and then start questioning, is like, could I have pushed it? Like, you know, could I keep going? And just kind of question that decisions. And fortunately, so far, actually never DNF a race. I think it's out of stubbornness too. Parts of it, like once I start something, unless it's a legit reason for me to quit, I just gonna keep going. And Stomach issue is always kind of like the biggest issue that I always have anyway. Like, you know, so after a while, you kind of learn to just like puke and rally. Like, you know, you just puke and then like keep going. Like, you know, like it's fine. So it's like, you know, like you ignore what, like, you know, because in the beginning, the first time, it's like, oh, like, you know, like you kind of get embarrassed when people see you puking on the side of the trails and stuff. But like after a while, it's like, screw it, just keep going. Like, it's fine, you know? So, yeah. And then, so I think that's the biggest thing. It's like, I just want to finish. And in a way, I didn't really have a reason to stop, you know, cause I was still moving. Like my legs was fine. You know, my breathing was fine. My energy, like, oh, sure, my energy got hit pretty quick because I didn't get to eat, but I was still moving. So it's almost like I have no excuse to stop. Like, yeah. So, yeah.
I think not giving yourself that out really helped, because you already know going into the race, like, I'm going to keep going no matter what. But if you go into the race like, oh, I can DNF if it gets really hard, then you're already giving yourself that way out. Because you can DNF, you know, you don't have to finish anything. You choose to be out there.
Yeah.
Buddy, right? You choose to be in pain and suffering. Like, you paid hundreds of dollars, and if you're traveling thousands of dollars to be out here and torture yourself, essentially. And why do you do this? Why, what gets you out and continue to do the suffering, and what gets you out of here?
You mean like during the race, or like just...
Yeah, like ultras. Like, why do you run ultras?
A lot of different reasons, but I think it's just like the experience. Like in the beginning, I think I run the distance just to know whether I could do the distance or not. Like, you know, and how I want to know how I do on that kind of environment. But I would say like when I race, it's all for like specific reasons, like, you know, kind of like UTMB, you know, I want to see around the Mont Blanc, like, you know, like the location, and I think the locations is a huge thing for me. I kind of count it as like just the experience, right? Like I want to experience all those, you know, and it's kind of like it's part of the adventures, like, you know, so... A lot of the race I do is something that I actually want to do. So, and, you know, there's only, like, even some of the race that, like, I think I only repeat one race, which is Sean O'Brien 50K. And that's for a different reason, because that was one of the races where I wanted to see how much I improve. So usually there is like a specific reason why I do each races, whether I want to see how fast I can go, or like, you know, how is it compared before, or like the new location, new places. I love racing in new places, like actually going somewhere to race. It's just like, you know, something that you usually don't see, and you get to see it all in one go. So
it's like adventuring and just exploring. Which do you still mountaineer and do snowboarding? I mean, skiing, right? You
skiing, yeah.
Yeah, skiing. Do you feel that contributes to ultra running? Because in the beginning, you were doing the running to help those activities. Yeah. Now, what's your relationship between ultra running and the other activities that you do?
It's almost like a struggle a little bit, like to balance everything. And like, that's the problems when you have way too many hobbies now. Like, you know, so in the winter, I started skiing about maybe 3 years ago now. So that's the newest sport that I got into. And now in the winter, that's mostly what I do, like skiing. So I still run during the week, and then I try to go skiing on the weekend. And I do a little bit of backcountry skiing, which means I can go uphill. So as weird as it is, I actually like the uphill. Like, you know, because I'm not really good on the downhill, but I like the uphill. So, and it kind of translates a little bit. Skiing is actually really, really hard. Like, it's harder than actually running uphill for me. So, for me, it's kind of like complement each other. The mountaineering, I think that's I want to say it's probably still a priority for me. So for example, like on the weekend, if someone asked like, do you want to go to climb these mountains or do you want to like run, I probably would go to the mountains. So, which is like hard. If I have a coach, my coaches probably will get really frustrated at, like, at me because I'll keep skipping my long run just to go to the mountains. So we will need to figure that out. But yeah, like that's like mountains, it's still, you know, my go-to. And if I can run, so I do a lot of adventures run in the mountains. So I started linking up routes, linking up mountains. So I still do like peak baggings, but also run to it. And then that's kind of becoming the not the priority, but the things that I like to do now. So I go to Sierra Nevada a lot, and then I just kind of map out a route where like, okay, let's do this 20 miles, but let's go up these mountains while you're at it. Like, you know, like that kind of stuff. Or like, I've been wanting to go to these mountains, like, oh, instead of backpacking, let's just run it. Like that kind of stuff. And it's actually great because ultra runnings allow me to do that stuff. Because before this, I couldn't do it. I would have to carry a heavy pack and move slower to do what I want to do. But now it's like I can move faster and I don't have to carry a heavy pack. So it's actually been a great training still for mountains.
Like the Tahoe Rim Trail that you did, you were able to backpack that. That's pretty awesome, right? You learned to pack like you know, like, okay, I can get away with packing this much stuff and this much food. You get to learn kind of like the combination between ultra running and backpacking, which brings you fast packing.
Yeah. And then, like, you know, ultra running kind of, you know, informed me like how far and how long I can go, right? So, and it gave me that confidence. So when we were doing Tahoe Rim Trail, there's a huge question mark. So I was like, okay, I've done 46 hours before. I know I can do 46 hours, but can we string this almost an ultra every day for 5-6 days? That was the new question marks that, you know, like we didn't know, or I didn't know, you know, and then, so yeah, like just, and then, but you kind of still have that confidence a little bit. So ultra running kind of gave me that confidence.
So what happens every time you reach that new level of like, of new comfort, your new comfort zone kind of starts expanding. You're like, oh, I can run 100 miles. I can run multiple days now. I can do this peak. I can do, like, what happens to you? Is there any like aha moments or any moments of just realizations for yourself of what your comfort zone really is compared to what you thought it was when you first started trail running?
I think like there's no like major aha moment, like a light bulb moment kind of things, but it's kind of because the progression is gradual for me. Like I didn't do 100 milers until, I guess the fourth year, I would say, like the fourth year. So I stayed in the 100K for a couple of years, for like a good 3 years. I jumped fast from like, you know, the first first marathon to a 50 miler and to 100K, and then I just stays on 100K because I wasn't ready, right? So the when I did UTMB, that was definitely a huge, you know, like, okay, now I can do actually 2 nights with no sleep. Like, you know, I was like, that's a huge thing. Like, that's a huge jump up kind of thing, and then going off like that long. So, but it was kind of like all the progressions, all the trainings, all the long runs that you know, I've been like doing for the past 4 years before that. It kind of like slowly building up your confidence a little bit.
Which is great because now you're doing things you never thought you would do, right?
Yeah. And it is, but even then though, like every adventures that I go out to, there's always, you know, like there's always the thoughts, like, you know, like some, like, kind of like every race is like anything can happen. So it's the same thing with the ultras, like, you know, with the adventures, like, you know, anything can happen. It doesn't mean that just because I've done 100 miles I can do this 26 miles in the mountains easy. Like, nope, it's just as hard.
And that's very important because sometimes we think like, oh, I've done it already. Like, I've done 100 miles before. And then you kind of go a little bit overconfident. Yeah. And that's when it backfires. Are you, or I've done a 50K before, a 50 miler before. It's like, no, every race is different.
Yeah.
It's its own. We have a question here. Is there a failure or loss in the DNF? I mean, you mentioned you didn't have a DNF, but a failure or loss that you grew significantly from. You want to share a little bit more? I know we can, and this could probably be a possibility to go into your injury, but if there's something else you want to talk about.
Yeah, no, there is there. Yeah, I think I haven't had a DNF officially, but, you know, like there's definitely a lot of failures, a lot of like, you know, stuff like, actually I think in I'm pretty critical to myself. So like in every race, even is like, there's always things to improve. But the recent thing that I can think of, like actually for Tahoe Rim Trails, and that sort of, so I mentioned that I always have a issue with my stomach. So I can't remember when it started actually, but every time I race or every time I go in long run past 10 hours, I just started puking. I tried different things. I tried different food. I tried gels. I tried non-gels. I tried, you know, real food, all that stuff, like different drinks, like multiple different things. I tried and it just, so for 2 years, every race I did, even though I finished, it was miserable. Like I was just suffering because I was puking half of the time and it was not fun. Right. And I was getting very, very frustrated with that just because I couldn't. It's almost like I'm just banging my head into the wall. Like, why is this? And, you know, there's possibility of different things. Like I just didn't eat enough, you know, which I'm really bad at. I didn't drink enough. I didn't drink enough, all that stuff. Like I know it's usually really hard for me to do. And I tend not to eat that much anyway. So on TRT, on the second day, it started happening again. And it drove me mad. Just like, why is it happening? And because I thought I was getting better at it. And it got so bad. And at that time, there were three of us that was doing TRT. It was Erwin, my husband, Brandon, and me. So I was looking at, I look at the map and was like, if I don't get out now, I would have, it's going to be a long way for me to bail. So, and at that point I was already puking for a couple hours. It was hot. And then it's just like, I just couldn't eat anything. So I decided to actually gut out. So TRT is another one, an asterisk that I would have to redo because I didn't finish it. So it's not official, but it's still like, I kind of count it as a DNF. So I got out that night mad at myself and then just baffled. And it's like, how, like if I can't, and I even think to myself, like, if I can't fix this, I can't run 100 miles anymore. I can't run a big races anymore because I can't keep pushing myself and puking it in every race. It's just not going to happen. So I was like, maybe I should go back down to like 50K, all that stuff. Like, you know, you have all this thought in your head. I got out and then just like tried to eat something and then like slept. And then in the morning, I was just kind of like trying to figure out, okay, now what am I going to do? Because they were like, the two of them kept going. Kind of tried to figure out different scenario, and I felt a little bit better in the morning. And I think that night I ate like 3 instant noodles or something like that, and I was able to kind of eat. And then in the morning I ate again, and I felt significantly better. So I was like, okay, there's one thing that I just haven't tried. So I kind of like, okay, there's one place I can meet up with them. So I just lost that one day, and I met up with them in Mount Rose, which is the next night. And before that, I was like, okay, let's try this. So I bought a box of fried rice, like, you know, and I bought a bunch of instant noodle with me. And we have a stove anyway, but generally you just don't eat that heavy food. You just eat like kind of snack here and there. That's one thing that it was like, I haven't tried it. I haven't tried to actually eat proper lunch and proper dinner, you know, like especially the lunchtime. So I brought that, and then the next day I rejoined them on the next sections. So, and lunchtime, I actually made time to like ate this, like, I put the fried rice in a Ziploc, and I just ate the fried rice in Ziploc. I think people was like, where did you get the fried rice? Like, you know, you're like in the middle of nowhere, and you have a fried rice. And doing that, I was actually not, I was feeling better. And it was, I was so overjoyed. I was like, this might be it. This might be the answer. And then, you know, like I ate the same big meal for dinner. And then the next 3 days after that, like, you know, even though usually you don't want to stop and eat lunch, I was like, nope, we'll stop, cook instant noodle, ate instant noodle, and then move. Like, I'd rather waste those time and then see if it actually works. And it really helped. Like, I survived the next 3 days without puking. And it just like, okay, this might be it. So I applied the same systems to my race a couple months after, which is Mountain Lakes. And thank God for my crew. They are the lifesaver, because every aid station where I saw them, they cook instant noodle and they pack instant noodle, like a dry instant noodle for me to bring. So I'm like bringing instant noodle with the Ziploc when I'm like running, but they were able to do that. So I can't remember how many instant noodle I ate during that race. I think probably 8 of them. But it helped. I only puke once, like, you know, so it's like, I haven't get a chance to test it again, but something like that, some like the from the mistakes or from the failure, you can call it a failure, it kind of gave me a different idea to try. You know, without that, I probably wouldn't finish my mountain lake race.
And then you were discouraged after that. If yeah. you would have not done it, the Mountain Lakes 100, you would have now, yeah, maybe it is instant noodle to the rescue. Maybe that's
like, I don't know,
but that's the beauty of the sport. And sometimes it's frustrating because it works. Sometimes it works one time and then it doesn't work the next time, but then yeah. It works the third time. You're like, I can't solve this mystery.
Yeah. Yeah. And everyone is different too.
Yeah. It is an experience. It's an experiment. You're pretty much a scientist and you're testing yourself, right? Yeah. You're testing yourself with all the different things. We have a question here. When you hit those constant repetitive 10-hour threshold, what do you tell yourself to get yourself out of the doubt? And what advice will you tell those that feel like they aren't capable of more?
So I think the biggest thing, so like, you know, when you think that you can't do it, it's actually to try, to make that step. Like, you know, because one thing for me that I kind of like always do, like, you know, one, I tend not to think that like I can't do it. Sure, like you're gonna have like questions and it's like, can I do it? Like can I push through it and all that stuff? It's okay to have those questions, but don't bail from it. Like, you know, at least giving it a try. Like just giving it a try, and it's okay to fail. Like, you know, because if you don't try, then there's no way to find out anyway. So taking that first step, I think that's the crucial part. So for me, like, yes, I kind of have that threshold. In my mind, I also know, like, if I'm putting the number in my head already, it might backfire mentally to me, because, like, then I get really nervous whenever I get to, like, this, what's going to happen in the 10 hours, after 10 hours, and it's stuck in your brain. So it's half mental game, and it's just, like, half, like, you know, like, physical games, right? So, like, I try not to think about that 10 hours benchmark kind of thing. But so I didn't stop. I just kept doing it, like, and it's almost to the point that it's silly, because, like, you know, because I knew it's because I'm like, oh, you know, something is going to happen, but I'm just going to keep doing it, like, you know. So bless my friends, they all seen me suffer, they still go with me, they slow down, like, you know, whenever I started going downhill, they stayed with me and they just push me through it to the end. So yeah, you just gotta, like, just, I don't know if it helps, but like, you just kind of like just keep trying to figure it out, keep going. Like, I wasn't ready to give up, like, and I, like, you know, I felt like I'm just going to keep trying, like, even if I, like, you know, let's say if I didn't figure out the instant noodle thing, if I had to go back down to, like, a, you know, like, not, it's not also back down, but, like, you know, doing shorter races, like a 50K, just trying to figure out and then really get really solid on the on the shorter distance, I would do that. And then I'll try to figure it out again. Like, so tracing my path back, it's not necessary a failure. It's just like one way to try to solve the problem. So
like adjusting the course, the route for yourself, right? There's, you might just have a little detour to get you back on track. Something I would add, because I've had this, where something that has helped me push outside my comfort zone is asking myself the question, like, okay, I'm scared to sign up for, let's say if I'm training for my first 50 miler, I'm scared to sign up for this first 50 miler. The question I ask myself is like, okay, what's the worst thing that could happen? What's the worst thing that could happen? And let's say the worst thing is you not finishing, it's failing, right? Like, okay, if I don't try, I'm going to fail, but I'm already stopping myself because I don't feel like I can fail. So technically not starting, I'm already failing because I'm not even giving myself that chance. When you give yourself that chance of the what's the worst case scenario, you're allowed to see what is your potential, where are you? And I think not seeing that as a failure, but seeing it more as in like, it's going to be a learning opportunity.
Yeah.
Like Nini said, like, you know, you take what you learn and you apply it to the next time you try it, but definitely asking yourself, what's the worst thing that can happen? And then going from there.
Yeah. And then the one thing too, a thing that a lot of us sometimes forget that like, to actually, it's just have fun. Like, you know, cause this is what we're doing, like running. It's not really a matter of life and death, right? Like, you know, like it's something that we do for, you know, because you enjoy it or because for whatever reasons that you have, like, you know, but still like you're trying to have fun. So one of the things that I told my crew on Mountain Lakes is I noticed that I tend to take things very seriously in the race. Like I get so caught up with it that you just like get like, I don't know. It's just like, you know, you just get too serious. So I was like telling them to like, remind me to have fun. Like, remind me not to get too serious. Like, you know, just, it does help. It helps to like lighten things up for me, you know? So one of my crew actually put on like a costume in one of the aid stations. I didn't recognize her at all. Like, you know, like she just showed up. I don't remember what the costume, she just showed up in front of me. I'm like, what? Who are you? Like, you know, and I said, and then it kind of like it takes my mind off from the race a little bit, and then just like, oh yeah, like okay, you know, it kind of like okay, like you don't get too serious. I mean, just doing it. So even so, that's really like, even if you fail, even if you DNF or anything like that, and it's fine because like, you know, it's just an experience.
And everyone will fail at one point in their life. Even athletes will fail. Like they have goals and they won't reach it and they go back and try it again and they learn and they go back and try it again. It's, if you're always winning and if you're always, there's never a failure moment. There's definitely, you're not pushing yourself outside your comfort zone.
Yeah.
You know, challenge yourself. There's another question here. Do you crew runners? If you do you enjoy it?
Yes, I love crewing. I love crewing and I love pacing. So, and I often said that I would probably enjoy pacing more or crewing more than actually racing. Racing puts a lot of pressure on yourself. And I, you know, that's why you get nervous before race and stuff. So like it's, you know, like there's a lot of things to logistically and all that stuff, but like when you crew, like, you know, you actually get to see everything, you get to see the race a little bit better, and it's great, and it's also like kind of give you a purpose why you're there. You know, running is a selfish thing, you know, it's a very selfish thing for like for oneself, right? So then, but when you're crewing and pacing, you feel like you're actually doing something more meaningful. So I actually like I actually really love it. This year especially is my crew year. I'm only crewing this year. I'm not even pacing this year, but I'm only crewing this year.
What advice would you give to someone who's looking for their first pacer and getting their crew together for the first time?
Get someone that you like and someone that like you, because they will see everything. Like they will see the worst that might happen. the worst version of you sometimes, because especially 100 miles, it stripped you raw. So like, you know, so then people were able to see how you work under the pressures and how you work in a very bad time and everything. So, you know, like it's nice to have your close friends there. A family, it's a little tricky sometimes, maybe a little too close, like if you have as a crew, but, you know, like, you want to have a crew or a pacer that you won't feel bad, like, you know, in a way. But it's a double-edged sword, because, like, you don't want to constantly keep thinking about them. It's like, are they doing fine? Are they enjoying themselves? Because it takes you out of your race. But in the same time, they can be the motivation for you to, like, let's say, not drop. Because, like, you have someone waiting for you on the next aid station. You got to get there at least to see them. Like, you know, so, you know, you can, they can be very, very crucial for the race.
I'm going to shift. I know we're getting towards the end of the podcast, but I do want to talk a little bit about, kind of shift the conversation of your most recent injury, only because I feel like I'm kind of going through it too, similar, you know, taking time off from running. And I think it's such a common thing for being a runner. There's, you know, the consequences. We put our body to extremes and then we hurt ourselves or we get injured or something happens. And I kind of just want to talk a little bit more of your experience. Tell us, like, recently about your ACL and just kind of how have you been navigating through it?
So luckily, actually, for running itself, like running injuries, I haven't get too bad of injuries so far. And so with this ACL, I actually tore my ACL during skiing in February. And obviously, I was in denial for a little bit until I got the official letter that says it was torn. And then I had to add a surgery to fix it. So generally for an ACL, so it's in my right knee. And I actually torn my left knee about 11 years ago. So luckily, I've been through it once. So it kind of helped me mentally to know what I'm going up against. Because ACL is a pretty major injury, like where they replace the whole ligament, which is the main ligament that keep your knee stable. So if you do not replace that, then, you know, your knee just kind of like buckling down. Like sometimes you will like walk and then you kind of buckle. And generally it takes, you know, for like elite athletes and stuff, sometimes they're back fully to their sports around like 8 months, but they're still about like 20% chances to be injured. And so it's a long, long recovery process, like probably about a year to be comfortably that. And some people even takes longer than that, to like 2 years. So, I'm about 5 months out right now. And I just started running outside on the trail last week, actually. And, I try not to think in terms of like, when can I do things? When can I, like, how long it's going to take? Because I know that's going to drive me crazy. But it's just what I was focusing or try to focus on, just like the little thing that I can do or what I can do outside. So the first, you know, like the first month, you can't really, I mean, actually the first 3 months, you can't do anything. Like, you know, you, I think I started hiking around month 4, that's when I started hiking again. And before that, you just kind of like wobble on the wall, like walking and stuff. So it was a very, very slow progress. And just kind of like the race, it's like up, down, up, down, up, down. There's like days where like, I'm progressing, this is awesome. And then the next day I was like, nope, that's not a progress. Like, you know, so it's constant. It's constant like that. And having the people around you that keep you motivated definitely helps, for sure. You know, like the support systems, I think it really helps. And, you know, I think because I knew how the process is, so then, you know, just like, I kind of know what's kind of like this stages of it. Yeah. So, but that being said, it's like, you know, the first day I document everything, like, you know, so like the first day I can get my legs straight. Yes. Like, you know, or the first day I get to run again on a treadmill. So those little things are kind of like, okay, I am moving forward slowly.
Like to celebrate the small victories, yeah. Right?
It has to. You kind of have to if you don't want to go crazy with it.
And is that what you learned from the first time around of like, okay, I can't look at the long-term picture, but just kind of focus on the now?
No. So I think like on the first one, you know, because I haven't started running or even doing a lot of, I was hiking at that time, but just leisurely. So I wasn't even training consistently and all that stuff. So the only thing, like the one thing I learned from that is that it takes a long time. So that was, and the one thing I really learned from the first time is that I was back 100%. Like I was able to be back 100%. So there's no question in that part where like, am I going to be able to do what I do now? So there was no question of that. Like I knew I can go back 100% again. It's going to take a while. Like, you know, cause the first time, and I didn't do a lot of PT on the first time, I was really bad with that. So it took me like almost 2 years to get my legs straight. Like it was always bent. So like this time I was like, oh, I'm getting my legs straight this time. Like, you know, so I was really regimented about my PT and stuff. So I learned not to do what I did the first time. That's what I learned not to.
What words of encouragement would you like to give someone who's currently, you're currently still in your situation, but you know, what advice or words of encouragement you like to give someone who's currently struggling through a injury? They can't run. Running, you know, for most of us, we use running as a form of, you know, compressed, de-stress, kind of help us with mental health and feel better about ourselves. And when we can't do the one thing we love, you know, it's so easy to fall into depression or kind of sadness or in a very dark hole. What words of encouragement would you like to give to that person currently struggling through some sort of injury?
Focus on what you can do. Like, you know, sure, I can't run. I haven't even run double digit right now. I can't run consistently for like 3 miles or even 30 minutes, you know, but it actually, the time actually gave me, it gave me time to do something else. So I'm doing a lot of strength training. I hate it, strength training or gym, but I'm doing that like, you know, every other day now, you know, and it actually, like, I was still adventuring. I was still out there. I was just still do something. Like, you know, don't just, like, kind of, like, stop doing everything completely. I think that's definitely going to, like, if I stop doing everything, that will put me on depressions. But I was still out there. Even if I can't run, I'm going to walk. Even if it's walk very slowly, even if it's only 10 minutes. And it's actually crazy. Like, you know, it's like 5 minutes, I'll take it. 10 minutes, great. Like, you know, 1 mile per hour, sure, it's fine. Like, you know, but I'm still out there. I'm still walking. And then, you know, like you, as an ultra runner, you get used to like, let's do this 10 milers. So let's do this 13 milers. You tend to think of like bigger things. But now, you know, I'm actually going up a mountain that's only like a mile away. Because like, I probably would not do it if I wasn't injured. Because like that would be too short. Why would I drive 1 hour just to walk a mile? Right? You know, like that's silly. Like I would not do it in a normal situation. But like now, I'm like, I will drive 2 hours just to walk a mile. Like, you know, it's fine. Like I'm still peak bagging. Like, you know, it's like, because I like going up something. I like to have the you know, something that I like, tag, like tap, like done, turn around, you know. And I'm doing all this like small hills and small mountains that I didn't want to do before. And I fully admit that like I usually kind of scoff at it. It was like, it's too short, you know. But now it's like, I'll do it. And that was like, it actually made me still go to places that I haven't been. Yeah. So just like try to find alternative. Like even if you think you don't like it, you might actually enjoy it.
That's true. That's true. Now we have time to do all the little things we never did because we never had time, or it was like not a priority at the time.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Get the last question from the audience, and it's, do you ever struggle or get to get motivated to start running, and what's your favorite race?
Motivations to start running, during the training, all the time. Like, it's actually really hard sometimes, especially if I have to do it in the morning. Like I mentioned before, I don't do well in heat, so I tend to avoid heat. I'm trying to make peace with heat right now, so I like try not to kind of, you know, box myself there. But it is sometimes waking up early when you're busy, when you have a lot of things to do, when your mind is elsewhere, it's very, very hard to get out. Sometimes it takes me like an hour and a half just to get out of the house, like, you know. But and then you probably hear this a lot of times too, but once you're out, you do a mile and you just like, okay, it feels better. Like, it actually feels better when you actually go out. Another thing that I started to embrace, especially the last couple of years, is actually friends. Like, I tend to run alone just because where I'm at, the time of the day that I go running, and it's just like sometimes it's more convenient to just run by myself, you know. But now, especially now that I'm running shorter mileage, I don't scare a lot of people to run with me anymore. So like, I just like ask people, and it's like, do you want to go for a run? Like, do you want to, like, I'm running this much, like, you know, or we can walk, it's fine. Like, using other people as the motivations, it's great. Cause like, when you have someone waiting for you at the trailhead at 7 a.m., you will go because you don't want to feel bad, right? It's like, it doesn't matter if you don't like it or you don't want to wake up, but it holds you accountable. So that when I need that little push, I reach out. I definitely reach out to people to like just make an appointment. Like, let's go run tomorrow at 6 a.m. Let's do this, you know, whether you like it or not.
It's like, I guess I'm waking up. I don't want to wake up.
Yeah, I mean, I still like, you know, grumble about it. I was like, oh, so sleepy and all that stuff, but you still like, gotta go.
And the second part of the question is, what's your favorite race?
That is actually pretty tough to say. I would say CCC is a big race for me. I really, really like it. You know, locally, I actually really like Sean O'Brien 50K specifically, and it's a nice route. But those are the two big things. Castle Peak, it's important because that's my first 100K, you know, to do. But and that's something that I kind of like want to try it again. But I think like those two. I would say those two are kind of my favorite.
And we're getting close to the and I know we went over time. Sorry, Rene. It's
just some
questions. If you were interested, that's really good. That's really good. Thank you, everyone who's been asking questions. So one of the purpose for this podcast is to get more women on the trails. We are, the sport is dominated by males. And sometimes it's heartbreaking because we, in a race like 100-miler, you have like 10 women and like 200 guys, and it's kind of, in a sense, it's good because that leaves an opportunity for women to do really well because the competition is not. But I want to get more women on the trails to help with the competition, to help each other, push each other, and just more diversity as well on the trails. And I just want to get, like, if I could just get more women, that's a win, and if I could get more diversity, that's even a bigger win. But my question to you is, what words of encouragement would you like to give to someone who's just a trail runner and they're really curious about ultra running, but it's, you know, it's intimidating, it's scary. There's so much, you know, especially with the news and, you know, there's so much, you know, there's a lot of fear that gets, you know, it's a lot of fear and it can be scary. But based on your experience, based on the benefits you've had, and, you know, you've been running ultras for 7+ years, what words of encouragement would you like to give to women who are interested in maybe attempting ultra running?
I think that the main thing is like to give it a try, like, right? To give it a try, and then to narrow down what's stopping you from doing it. Like, if it is, you know, like fear, of like running alone and stuff, and definitely, you know, find that little community. What's great about our sport, trail running, is that the community of it, it's amazing, right? And almost in every locations, there are groups, there's running groups, or even when there's no running group, there are people like just training almost every day. So sometimes it's hard to make friends, but like to make new friends, but like just find that community. And we're very friendly. Trail runners are very friendly. Like, you know, so then like a lot of runners were just like more than happy to just, yeah, let's do this. Like, let's run together and stuff. As a woman, especially with the recent news, that was like heartbreaking. And, you know, that's always on our mind, right? Like when we run outside alone and all that stuff, and take all the precautions that you can do. I run with the bear spray sometimes, mostly also because my trail has some mountain lions there. There's a lot of mountain lions there, so I run with the bear spray, but it also works for human, you know, so that keep me more comfortable a little bit. So, like, try to narrow down what's stopping. If it's, like, the race or, like, maybe logistic-wise, so, you know, you don't know how to get to the race or prepare to the race, like, again, like, you know, reach out to the community, reach out to the people, like, reach out to both of us, like, ask questions. I'll be more than happy. And, you know, if you think, like, you don't have a crew, you don't have a pace, you'll be very surprised, you know, like, you just ask someone, who wants to crew me? Someone will raise their hands and then, help out. So, I guess, like, don't be scared to ask, like, for anything, for questions or even just companies, like, you know, because there's a lot of us. There's a lot of us there, you know, and, I'm always up for, like, you know, running with someone. It's like, even if it's new friends and stuff, like, let's do it. Like, you know, that's why not?
Yeah. And like you said earlier, right now, they should grab you right now, because this is when you're doing low mileage. But won't feel intimidated. Yes. About double digit run.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Renee, for joining me today. I really enjoyed talking to you. I feel like we can go on forever. I do want to leave some, you know, open the door for you. Is there anything else you would like to share with the community? Any other thoughts, anything about ultra running, anything that has benefited you, or just any thought that you may have that you would like to share?
I think, like, you know, like, I just want to kind of people to really know, I guess, it's not like a secret or anything like that, but like, you know, like, yeah, like trail running or ultra running in per se is like, the community is awesome. Like, you know, like, you know, people are friendly on the trail generally, like, you know, and it's great just like to give it a shot. Just go out there and then try it, like, you know, or even if you don't want to run first, and or if you don't want to race first, just volunteer. Like, volunteering is also great, like, you know, just to know what's going on, what's the sports is all about, you know. And but yeah, but be safe. Be safe out there. Yeah.
And have fun.
Yes, definitely.
Well, thank you so much today, Renee, for joining me today. And thank you everyone who joined us on the chat and with us asking questions. I will be put, if you missed some of the conversation today, the whole video will be saved in my IG. I will also upload, if you missed part of it, you want to listen or re-listen to this, I will be uploading to Spotify, Apple Podcasts, so you can listen it through those platforms. And if you're listening this through the podcast, thank you so much for your support. Really appreciate you. I've been enjoying these interviews and just interviewing a lot of badass women from the trails, from all over, and just connecting and just sharing our knowledge and experience. So thank you, everyone. And thank you, Renee. And I'll see you soon.
Bye. Thank you.
Bye.